When I'm on my way to drop off the kids at school and I'm on about 5 hours of sleep and I haven't had my coffee yet, I'm truly one of a kind.
Yeah, this sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
It is. But there is one thing I can do immediately to bring some comfort and calm to the situation and keep me moving forward. Eat Keebler Sandies.
I like to think that if the good-looking guy was still around, sitting on the couch, comforting himself about not getting into college, he'd ditch the Cocoa Puffs and down some Keebler Sandies instead.
Mixed with chocolate syrup?
Ooh, why not?
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat to keep you going.
Each Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie is baked to perfection by the Keebler elves for a light sweetness and a texture that melts in your mouth.
The next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for Keebler Sandies shortbread cookies to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago, and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get.
They can help you find work in any industry. With just one interview at Express, you have a connection to endless jobs.
Whether you want a contract job, a new full-time role, or a summer job, choose Express Employment Professionals.
Express has more than 860 locally owned locations and no fees for job seekers.
Visit expresspros.com today to find a location near you. This is going along the same lines as you guys not knowing I had a pony growing up.
What bombshell are you?
More animals?
I know. No. What bombshell are you about to drop?
I don't think you guys knew this because I think it might have already been gone by the time you came up there. But so I totally forgot about this. This is really, this pre-show chatter is just appreciation for my parents, my dad in particular, King Strong, an unbelievable father. And it struck me how amazing he was when I was sitting with Indy and I was dropping him off at a class and we were sitting across from Amazon Fresh. And he's like, there's an Amazon Fresh? And I was like, yeah. He's like, what's that? And then this leads to, you know, Jeff Bezos has so much money. I'm like, how do you even know who Jeff Bezos is? But okay. Right. And then he's like, Elon Musk. And so I'm like, all right, let's pivot this into like a real conversation. I'm like, so what would you do? Like, what would you do if you had all the money in the world, right? And it was like, we get past it, like, well, I just buy every toy. It was like, yeah, okay. But then, you know, what would you do? And, you know.
Oh, wait, this is Indy you're talking. For some reason, I thought you were talking to your dad and you didn't know why your dad knew who Elon Musk was. And, like, seriously, I was like, because
I was driving my dad off to class.
Yeah, I was like, why wouldn't your dad know who Jeff Bezos was?
Daddy, what would you do with all the money, Daddy?
Gotcha. Okay, I'm on board.
Anyway, this is one of those, like, fun parenting conversations that, you know, you want to hear, like, what your kid thinks about the world. And to Indy's credit, he pretty quickly got to, like, well, I would help people. I would give it, you know, I would want to give some money to people that, you know, are homeless and da-da-da. And I was like, okay, yeah, well, what, you know, you have to pick a cause and you care only about Americans or you go international. We're talking about philanthropy. And then I was like, okay, but like beyond, like, what would you want to do? Like, and he's like, what if we had another house? I'm like, yeah, that fits like my dream too, having a second house. And he's like, oh my God, Dad, what if we could have a water slide? And I remembered, My dad built me a water slide. Did you guys know this?
No. That's so cool.
When we were kids, when we were like 8 or 9, we realized we had this. So one, a tree that they had chopped down right in front of our pool. It was like like a stump of a redwood tree, but then it started to regrow. So it was actually like 30 feet tall and it had this like big stump section. So we had a treehouse in there and had a, you know, a platform of wood and a ladder to get up to it. And at some point at like 8 or 9, we realized like, oh, you could actually from the top of this treehouse go down 10 feet or whatever, 15 feet to the pool. So my dad and my grandfather took a couple of months and built a full-on half-pipe water slide.
Wow.
Out of fiberglass. Yeah, it was crazy. And pump figured out how to get water up there. So we had like, we would go turn this little thing and it would shoot water down a full-on water slide. And then he put roller skates on the bottom of it so you could push it out of the way so it didn't block the whole like the pathway around the pool. So yeah, by the time it was gone, by the time you guys ever came up to Rotuchire, because I think we ended up, that tree is no longer there, like the treehouse, and we, you know, so it was only between like eight or nine and like probably right around Boy Meets World 13, 14. But it made our house the coolest house. Like, when, yeah, you know, when we had soccer games, we would have like the after party at our house because everybody wanted to come to the water slide. It was so much fun. But the best part was the discovery. We realized, like, you know, you would go fast down this little water slide. But then we were like, well, we want to go faster. And we realized that if you were naked, you could slide down this because your skin on this fiberglass was just like, whew, it was like slick. And so, yeah, so we would always be like, all right. And we just pull our bathing suits down and go bare butt. It was like going bare butt. And you would haul ass literally down the water slide. It was so, so much fun.
Well, how fast did Susie go down?
Yeah. We rode Susie to the top of the water slide. Oh my God. But I mean, it was just like, I mean, think of, like, I just can't believe the commitment that my dad had. Like, I totally forgot about it until I'm sitting there talking with Indy and his like dream. He's like, we could have a water slide into our own pool, you know, and I'm like, that would be amazing. Oh my God, my dad did that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. There's recently been a thing going around. It's not, you know, it's not like novel. People have thought of it and said it over the years, but there's a thing recently going around on social media about like ways to make your house the cool house when your kids are young that they want to bring your friends around you, that your friend, that you're comfortable with their friends, that their friends feel comfortable around you. Yep. And there was a woman who said, they only have one rule. They have like over every weekend, they have a kid party, but the kids have to turn in their phones when they walk in. So they turn in their phones into a thing and then they can do anything they want for the rest of the day. They provide food and drinks and games and
cigarettes and crack cocaine.
Booze and
yeah, just.
No, I meant like juice boxes and stuff.
No, but my parents have told me that they made that conscious decision. They were like, we want your friends to come to our house. And it totally worked. We still go to my parents' house. Totally. Like we make a mass exodus every summer with all of my friends because my parents made such an effort. And like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to build a water slide, but I definitely want to, you know, I want my house to be that because I think it's so important. It's like the best way to have a relationship with your kids and your kids' friends.
And that's why Will has made a ban on all fun in his house. He said, I don't want any kids in my house.
My house is awesome for me, but I'm the guy where like Halloween comes, the lights are off. I have razor wire that goes across everything. Yeah. Kids not welcome.
Stay away.
I actually have the least kid-friendly home.
I know
you could essentially ever be. You have to walk over stone and a pond to get into my house. The backyard is one giant open pool.
You do actually have a lot of toys.
Yeah,
yeah, but they're toys that kids are not allowed to play with.
Yeah,
because they're still in the package. So it's like,
do you really keep everything in the package still?
It depends on what it is. If so, first of all, the only toys that I have are toys of characters that I've done.
Okay. Right.
So I usually, not all of us had ponies and water slides growing up.
Do you have any that you can like push a button and you hear your own voice?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, good. Of course, there are tons of those.
Oh, my God. But do you keep them in the packaging? Because Indy would love that. If you showed up with a toy that had your voice, he would just think that's the coolest.
I would usually get two back in the day. So I'd get one to display and one that I just keep in a package, like in a box, if it was ever worth something. So I have, you know, but yeah, I mean, even I think behind me, I don't think that Ron Stoppable talks
about Batman.
Yeah, I have a bunch that say like, I am Batman, or, you know, this is totally cool. And there's a bunch of Ron Stoppable ones, you press a button, it's like, oh, booyah, like stuff like that. So, but then what started to happen in the industry.
Do you get 5 cents every time a kid pushes the button?
No. And what's worse
is. A residual check.
What's worse is in the industry, what started to happen was they started to hire non-union actors to record the toys because they didn't want to pay us anymore to do the toy stuff. And I remember one recording session that I had to do a Batman watch, and you had to record for every time.
Oh my
gosh.
So
I would sit there going, it's 1, 2, 3. And then you'd finish and go, 101.
Wow.
102.
Oh.
10. So it's like a 6-hour session to make sure that when you press the button, it would go, it's 1:34 p.m.
Well, see, now they just pull your voice from the internet and like AI.
Now they just AI would do it.
Guys, exactly. Let's make Pod Meets World figures. What would our Pod Meets World figures say?
Mine would say bizarre, I think.
Just mine would say, wow.
Would say like, and Danielle's would say wow.
like mine would just ramble incoherently and then like make them like bombastic statements.
That or the
that's
press
how they
button.
Get you would be a good
one. Yeah. They press a button and it would just go, God, I hate toys. I hate being a toy. This is the worst. Why? Who even likes toys? Toys are commercial.
Mine
and corporate.
Would have a pony. A little
it
Susie.
Would, and a little water slide.
A
little Susie. You put it on.
And what about yours, Danielle? What would your toy
mine
say.
Would ask a question and then just talk. Mine would say, what do you like to do on a date? Because what I like to do on a date is I like
funny.
To go for a long walk.
Wills would just scream merch, but like keep a variety of different merch.
Bunch of
or
merch.
Would explain why I'm like, I'm sorry, I no longer do the Feeny call. I gave it to the girls. I'm going to. You know, something like that too.
I gave it to the girl. Yeah, like a
it'd
long
have to be a long description.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay. I need two toys that would actually finish the other one.
But all anybody would want is a doll of you doing the Feeny call.
That's
would you
exactly
record
the
Feeny call for a doll? Would you do it?
It depends on where the money would go. If the money would go to a good place, like to me, then yes.
Like your bank account, yeah.
Right. If it would go to my account or to help other people that would give me money, then yes.
Right.
Right.
That makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. If other people to help would give you money. Yeah. I like this idea. Welcome to Pod Meets World.
Oh, you're still. See, I was just. Sorry. Perfect for what I was going to say. I was going to say when all three toys got together, they just talk over each other. So
you have to push all their buttons together
at the same time and they just start talking over each other. I love it.
Welcome to Pod Meets World. I'm Danielle Fishel.
I'm Ryder Strong.
And it is 1:34. I'm Wilfred.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
It's 2024 and stress is already everywhere.
Deadlines at work.
Your kid's screaming at you.
Non-stop traffic.
The world is ending.
That's a big jump there, Ryder.
Yeah, sorry, kind of true.
Yeah, well, when we want to get away from the struggles of everyday life and have some comforting me time, we break into some Keebler Sandies.
Let's say it's finals week and Mr. Feeny has scheduled all of the tests into one day. How will Topanga find a comforting moment to herself?
Go to the mall?
Not with this hair.
Play guitar with her father, Jedediah?
Depends on which Jedediah.
Bite into some delicious Keebler Sandies?
Exactly. Keebler Sandies are buttery shortbread cookies made with simple ingredients.
And each Keebler Sandies cookie is baked to perfection by the adorable Keebler elves for a light sweetness and texture that melts in your mouth.
God bless those little Keebler elves.
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat that will keep you going.
So, the next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for a Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
Tell the elves Pod Meets World sent ya.
They're real. I've seen them.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Through the whirlwind that has been season four of Boy Meets World, it sometimes feels like the hits just keep coming. Whether it's classic episodes, iconic lines, or punchlines that have survived almost 30 years, take your pick, we're in the midst of true sitcom sicko mode. And if we were to write a list of impactful new regulars that this package of 22 episodes brought us, this week's podcast guest would be right up top. The often-mentioned Verna Hunter was commonly referenced in seasons prior, but it wasn't until Fishing for Verna that we put a face to the name and forever helped cement the backstory of Sean and give his character the depth it deserved to move forward. We'd see her again in Janitor Dad, then Turkey Day, and then she'd unceremoniously disappear as quickly as she arrived without explanation. Until she's talked about during season 7 with a revelation that was emailed to us as a spoiler maybe 200 times. After leaving the trailer forever, you'd see her pop up on shows like The Practice, X-Files, ER, and Charmed, but she'd soon after take her talents and passion to a field I personally love, vintage clothing. She's a designer who has curated and morphed older pieces into her own, seen on clients like Kirsten Dunst and Katie Holmes, and she even had her own reality show called Dresscue Me. She now focuses on building stunning bridal dresses and evening wear from repurposed materials. And now we are thrilled to welcome a woman of many talents to Pod Meets World. It's Verna Hunter herself, Shireen Mitchell.
Oh, hey!
Hi!
Hi, it's so nice to see you guys.
Nice to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here. I watched all three episodes that I was on last night. And, you know, I was struck by what a beautifully written show it was.
Right.
You know, the intelligence of the writing really is classic. You know, it stands the test of time, and a little bit sad that so many of the social issues that were being discussed on those episodes are still relevant today.
Yes.
You know, it's like humanity really doesn't change, you know?
The fashion does. That's about it.
That's about it. Exactly. Hairstyles and hair color and age.
Was that the first time you had seen the episodes since you did them?
No. Since I'd done them, I'd seen videos. You know, I got to tell you guys, I did a lot of work, and I'm doing a lot of work now, which is interesting. And I'd like to talk about that. But when people ask me about my career, and I tell them the things that I've done, although I have done bigger parts than this and kind of more notable projects, notable as in for me, because I had a 3-episode arc. I wasn't like a regular or something.
Right.
People, women especially, lose their minds. They're just, they start screaming. They can't even believe that I was Sean's mom. They're like, no. You know, they get so excited. It's very sweet. And it tells me how, you know, you guys raised more than a generation. I think you raised like 2 generations of young people.
Yes. Yeah,
it's weird, right? Like we kind of had no idea either. that's what so much of this podcast has been about, is like us realizing, oh, this thing that was, you know, in our minds, like just a small part of our lives or the beginning part of our lives has, you know, really had a resounding effect on so many people. It's so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the shows that you came home from school and watched or watched in the evening with your family, and they have an impact. I have to say, you know, Michael Jacobs, I was really acknowledging him, and I know there's another creator, and I didn't ever interface with her. You know,
She was gone by that point. One. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, he created a beautiful show, and it has tremendous emotional integrity, and every episode without being corny. And I guess again, it's the writing and you know, you guys really carry a lot of talent. And that talent is still with you. I watched you all work yesterday and I was just like, God, they're so talented. Their timing, their deliveries, the level of freedom in your performances. You know, I've learned a lot more about acting and actors as I've gotten, as I've grown up. Mm-hmm. When I was doing it then at that point, I really still was kind of new, you know? Yeah,
right.
Well, let's talk about that, actually. Do you remember your audition for Boy Meets World?
I do. I can still see myself going. I think that was at Gower.
Okay, we were at Sunset Gower.
It might have been there. And, you know, at the time, I had just finished a series with Tony Danza, so I had been a series regular on a comedy. And I had become aware by that point, too, that doing a sitcom is really the best gig in the business.
Yep. Absolutely.
Sure is.
It really is. And it remains in my mind and in my heart that remains a truth. But so I was excited, you know, about going up for this part. And I also thought that Verna was an opportunity for me to be a little, to explore kind of the wackier side of my personality. It's funny. I watched the performance and you guys will relate to this yesterday. I was like, I could have done that better.
Of course. Is also what this podcast is. It's the three of us watching going, man, we could wish we could go back and do that over again.
And then we say it on the podcast and then everyone writes us emails being like, stop being so hard on yourself. And it's like, but we can't help it. It's there.
It's not hard on ourselves, but it's more recognizing as you learn more about comedy, how I could have made her funnier. She was quirky. So in any case, I remember the audition and I remember getting the job. I remember my agent calling me and telling me that I'd gotten it. And, you know, I was delighted, of course, because I thought that she was a really sweet character. And I think that's the funny part now, too, is that she would have been more comedic if I had made her, if I had made her a little harder, a little tougher. Mm. But she ended up just being a little zany, which is appropriate for me and for the way that she's described. Right. So,
yeah, well, that's what I was wondering, because that first episode is actually more dramatic.
Yeah.
You know, and when we watched it, I was like, gosh, this is like a one act play, you know, like I called it like Sam Shepard light, you know, it's like, and I mean, and it was interesting. I was thinking like, I wonder if Shireen knew, like when you were cast that you would end up having to do actually more comedy. Like by the second and third episode, Verna's mostly there for laughs.
Yeah.
We'll laugh. Yeah. I don't know. I honestly mean, just to be honest, I don't remember what I was told. I do remember realizing that there was a dramatic element to her role. There would have to be because, you know, Ryder was without a mom.
Right.
Which is like, wow, kind of. And I was confused and I'm still a little confused. Maybe you can enlighten me. Who was he living with, Chet or not? Before these episodes, who was he living with?
So in second season, I was living with Mr. Turner, the teacher, because Chet leaves to go after you, to chase you down. And then the end of season three, right? Mm-hmm. End of season three, Chet comes back and takes me into his life. And it's sort of this bittersweet thing because you actually can kind of tell that Chet's not a great father and that he is not, you know, super responsible. And there's insinuation of like, alcoholism, but it's never like really explicitly stated, but you get the feeling that Sean might have been better off with Mr. Turner, but Mr. Turner wasn't ready to take him, so he goes back to Chet. But then we don't really develop the home life with Chet until you came, until this episode. That's the first time I think we saw the trailer and we see where the home life is. And so it's really, you know, I mean, that's the thing about these sitcoms, right? It's like one episode can sort of rewrite history or like define the characters. So I think your episode, that Fishing for Verna episode, really established the Hunter family dynamic.
You know, so the backstory for me about the third episode is that I don't know if you guys know this or if you remember, but Blake Clark, who played Chet, plays my husband, is a hysterically funny person.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't know if you can tell, but in my takes, it's sort of the way I'm speaking now. I was on the verge of hysterical laughter. And I begged him. I leaned in. I said to him, I am begging you, please dial it back. Because I couldn't keep it together.
Right.
And Michael Jacobs called me off stage and he was like, Shireen, if you fall apart one more time, I am sending you home. And I was like, and then I burst out laughing because I...
Right, because you seriously couldn't have help it.
I was so... first of all, I'm an easy laugh. You know, I love to laugh. And yeah. I have a really easy funny bone. You know, so I'm more a good laugher than I am necessarily funny. I'm funny because I can create humorous characters, you know. But what's his name? Blake Clark is a comic, you know.
Yeah.
And he knows how to get you. And he just knew that I was sensitive to his sense of humor. And I could barely look at him without falling apart.
Amazing.
Betsy has this line when she says something about he was my biological father. What
yes.
was that?
Oh, the
yes.
post. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And I mean, it was all I could do because it's like she just kept upping the ante. It was all I could do not to fall apart again. And so I would say that if Verna didn't come back to remain in Sean's life, it is entirely my fault.
Because you could.
No, I don't think so.
No, I mean, I break all the time. We've been watching episodes where you can see me just losing it and they just had to keep it in, you know, like I'm exactly the same way. And that's funny because I actually remember us just losing it all the yeah. time with Blake. And, you know, the tension of an audience, too, when you have a live audience and the pressure to get through it, you know, if you get the giggles, it's over.
Yeah, like, but it's just that's Blake, too, as the comic. Exactly like you're saying, Shireen, it's that if he sees something that makes you laugh, he's reading his audience and he is going to continue pushing that button because it's a guaranteed laugh. And that's what you're going for as a comic. So yeah. He was phenomenal at doing that.
He also would know, like, if that he had given you a delivery of something that was really funny and you laughed at it and now you're expecting it. So you're going to be able to keep it together because you know what to expect. So then he would just do something totally different.
Yep.
That's equally as funny. And you were like, wait, I had been able to get myself to a still place because I thought I knew what you were going to do. Yeah, it was that anytime we worked with Blake, I remember it being hard to keep it together. And I wasn't even in a lot of scenes, if any scenes with Blake, but I remember watching run throughs. And yeah, just seeing so everybody lose it with him all the time.
That's another thing I want to acknowledge the show for, which is that all the supporting roles, all the guest stars are terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, those two boys, the brothers that cross the street and risk their lives.
The Stakinos, yes, Herman and Frankie.
Oh my God, they're so funny. And the writing for them is so intellectual. You know, that's what makes it funny. I really admired that. And then the guy that comes into Will, he worked in a scene with you and your dad, who he's like, I come here from the backwoods to
yes.
work. Oh, yeah.
And another great character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the big burly mountain man.
The burly mountain man. The casting was really terrific.
What we talked about Blake and what it was like working with Blake, what were your impressions of a young writer strong? And what was your relationship? Do you remember working on your relationship or did you guys try to keep some distance because you were supposed to be estranged? What was that relationship like?
I feel like I got closer to Corey's character to Ben because he kind of led the way. And I will admit that I've changed a lot since those years. I was actually very shy when I was on a set. I don't know if, you know, your listeners understand, but, you know, when you're a guest and you're coming into a core group of regulars, the regulars are under a lot of pressure to deliver the show. And the guest is really just a small part of the whole episode. And I know this too, because when I was a series regular on a series with Tony Danza called Hudson Street, we had a year and I was, on the show that full year. And I remember being under a lot of pressure, you know, to deliver an entire episode and to just really deliver the comedy of my role and so on. And when guests would come, you would want to be welcoming and inclusive and make them feel comfortable. But at the same time, you know, you had your own life and stuff to deal with. So I don't recall really getting very close to you. Because there really wasn't room. And then also there's just even the pressure of kind of, not the pressure, but the importance, the value of taking seriously my own lines and my own mm-hmm. moments that, as I recall it, also at the time, I likely had my own dressing room or yep. even maybe small sure. trailer. And, you know, I just finished an independent film and I'll tell you guys about it. It's a beautiful movie. And we, my sister and I have started a production company. And so this was our first, we produced it, which oh, I'm sure you might know is like going through a war.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. It's an independent film and I acted in it, you know, but there was no trailers, no dressing rooms. And like, you're just like working the whole, you know, you're literally calling quiet on the set and delivering a deep performance all in one go. Whereas when you're, when I was doing shows like this on television, there's a lot of protection. The actor is protected a lot. You know, a mm-hmm. PA or an AD, generally a PA will take you to your trailer, take you to lunch, bring you to the set. Mm-hmm. And then again, you break and you go off. And the regulars study their lines or they're getting notes. I mean, right. it looks easy, but comedy is actually hard. And the writers, especially, I'm sure the writers of this show, because the writing is so keen, you know, the writers are giving you notes between takes and, yeah, and sure. helping you hone the comedy. And so I really don't recall socializing. Also, you guys were young.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would have been going off into school. I mean, what's amazing is that we actually don't have that many scenes together. Like, it's right. funny because yeah. when you showed up on screen, I was like, oh my God, it's Shireen. I totally remember. And then I was like, wait. Ben gets the big scene with her, you know, right. and I remembered that scene as if I had been in it because I must have been there for the run-throughs watching sure. it. But then I was like, oh, but then you show up in the trailer at the end of the episode, and that's kind of it. And yeah. then, yeah.
Well,
and
then the rest, janitor dad, it's and then, you and Blake at school,
right?
More yeah. so than you, yeah. you know. So yeah. you do
Shireen
have a
and
great
I don't have that many right. interactions.
It's like, so strange yeah. though, because it really works well for the character that there's something about the idea that Sean's mom gets along. And gets closer with Corey and other people around everyone but Sean. Like yeah, for some yeah. reason, there's some disconnect with her mm-hmm. and her own son that mm-hmm. actually really worked for the characters as you're going. You know, Blake is obviously overcompensating as trying to be the funny dad and doing everything he can. And Verna feels the disconnect. I mean, it did. It just worked for the whole family dynamic.
Yeah. And I mean, yesterday I was like, oh, I see it almost maybe, I feel it even the other way, which is that I wrote to him every day. And yeah. so perhaps I didn't have to work that relationship because we felt connected. We were connected, mm-hmm. but the relationship that had to be written and sorted was the one with Blake, you yeah. know, with Chet, because he was sort of blamed for me, oh my God, abandoning my son. I mean,
right.
you know,
right.
it was kind of a courageous move on the part of the writers, you know,
yes.
really. Right,
well,
you know?
And so brilliantly played, because as we talked about when we did the recap of your first episode, we were primed as an audience to not like this woman, because oh. who could abandon her child? And right. then yeah. you come on and you're just like, you love her and she's kind. Right. And even though you still have a hard time understanding how she could just pick up and leave her son and by the way, take his home, because you
I
left
still had
in
a
the
huge
trailer.
Problem with that. I still Will had a still, huge problem with that. Yeah.
But they
Wait,
did.
What did I do? I took his home?
You
what?
Took the trailer. Yeah. You left not, in the trailer the family lived in. So he didn't have a space to live. No, when you left, it was, there was no trailer. And then Blake
so we
takes
homeless,
off. To,
right?
So yeah,
yeah you left
your
family
son
homeless.
And your husband homeless.
God, you guys, that's a nightmare.
I know. Well, it's funny because it actually isn't really addressed. I mean, they sort of do this sleight of hand where you show up in that hotel room scene with Corey and you are so sympathetic because you sort of emanate a sadness and a like and a fragility that is like, oh, this poor woman. But in reality, like they don't really ever address the fact that you did a pretty awful thing. And that's yeah. what Will couldn't get over. Will was kind of like, this,
it needs
no,
to be
I can't,
addressed.
You know,
it's like, yeah,
but it's a tricky thing. You know, I think yeah. they kind of had backed themselves into this backstory and then they wanted to, you know, introduce your character and they kind of had to ignore that
right.
to, in order for you to stay, to remain likable, which you are likable.
Yeah. Completely.
It's a little bit of a cheat.
It was a cheat. Yeah.
It is. But I have to say though, that I wonder what the intention was for Sean, meaning that Sean would end up being this young man who I guess would be, Well, wanting to connect a lot to other people, especially perhaps Corey, because he doesn't have a tight family of his own, I guess. Absolutely. That would have been the intention, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or that would have been the result, is that it might have created a young boy, a young man who needs contact, needs inclusion. I don't know.
I mean, one of the biggest themes of the show, that, you know, it's explicitly stated in one episode, but then it is an overriding theme, is that you don't have to be blood to be family. And that, you know, it plays out in Sean's overall storyline, that he essentially needs Corey, Topanga, the Matthews family, to compensate for what he's not getting at home. But there's also
something interesting that I'm just thinking about now as we're discussing this, where Sean has a much easier time connecting with men and boys than he does with girls or women. Mm-hmm. Like, even Topanga, they have, you know, kind of an ongoing problem. They fight against each other a little bit. We don't get a steady girlfriend until Angela. So there really
is a tortured relationship.
It seems like he's got a trust issue.
He's got mommy issues.
Yeah, when it comes to women. I mean, he definitely does.
When you have abandonment issues, sure.
Yeah.
Shireen, I'm curious, when you came in to audition for the role, were you given any of the backstory that they had set up originally for the character, or no?
Again, I don't fully remember, but I do remember knowing that this was his long lost mom who had gone away and left the family, and that there was some kind of dark past, and that she's returned.
Okay.
And that's it. And just that through, you know, I didn't know the entire arc because I only probably had the one episode when I auditioned. Right. They hadn't created either a victim in Verna, nor a kind of hard, mean woman either. She's kind of had her reasons. I mean, again, they wrote an interesting character.
Yeah.
She's pretty complex.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
It's 2024 and stress is already everywhere.
Deadlines at work.
Your kid's screaming at you.
Non-stop traffic.
The world is ending.
That's a big jump there, Ryder.
Yeah, sorry, kind of true.
Yeah, well, when we want to get away from the struggles of everyday life and have some comforting me time, we break into some Keebler Sandies.
Let's say it's finals week and Mr. Feeny has scheduled all of the tests into one day. How will Topanga find a comforting moment to herself?
Go to the mall?
Not with this hair.
Play guitar with her father, Jedediah?
Depends on which Jedediah.
Bite into some delicious Keebler Sandies?
Exactly. Keebler Sandies are buttery shortbread cookies made with simple ingredients.
And each Keebler Sandies cookie is baked to perfection by the adorable Keebler elves for a light sweetness and texture that melts in your mouth.
God bless those little Keebler elves.
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat that will keep you going.
So, the next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for a Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
Tell the elves Pod Meets World sent ya.
They're real. I've seen them.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
K-12.
Can you talk a little bit about what it was like working with Rusty and Betsy in the Turkey Day episode?
Oh my
We were talking about how that it's never mentioned that, you know, for a while when Sean, before he went to live with Mr. Turner, he lived with the Matthews. And then we do this Turkey Day episode where the families are spending time together. And similarly to the way they kind of had to ignore that you had abandoned your son and stole his home, the other characters also kind of had to ignore the idea that we're just going to go to this woman's house for Thanksgiving, even though we almost had to adopt her son. So what was that like for you working with Rusty and Betsy?
You know, you guys, again, I think I learned more about the episode that I participated in by watching it again than maybe by being in it.
Sure.
Because again, when you're a guest, you mostly focus on your scenes. And I have a very vivid memory of the entire Thanksgiving scene in the trailer because it was so funny to me. And Blake was funny. The whole idea of me serving the cheese and wanting to make the sangria out of the wine and how completely sort of, you know, Verna was a bit guileless. You know, she didn't really know any better.
Right.
And there's this heartbreaking moment when Betsy hands me that beautiful casserole dish. And I noticed in my own work, I was like, oh, wow, look at me. I just sort of touched the dish. I mean, it makes me want to cry now. You know, she's like, oh, the realization that, you know, and that's what the episode was about. And it was so beautifully handled. This idea of disparity, you know, income disparity or income inequity. And it's being handled right there in their lives. Like, oh, and then it was fascinating too, this, what happened with these guys, you know, in the trailer park who were a little bit like, who is this family coming here from the other side of town? And, you know, they're going to make fun of us. And how beautifully kind of there was a resolution at the end. But my memory of that, first of all, they're all, you guys, all of you are terrific comedians, terrific actors. And, you know, they were no exception. You know, you guys were consummate. Even at a young age, it is not easy to pull off that kind of comedy. And week after week after week. And so, yeah, they're terrific actors. And again, I was like an innocent I was surrounded by comedy sharks. You know, I just, everybody was zinging me, you know. I really had a rough time keeping it together. I was having too much fun.
I know
all
you,
the way around.
You made the joke that the reason we don't see Verna again is because you couldn't keep it together. But did you know then that Turkey Day was going to be your last episode? We were shocked when that episode came around and I read, this is Shireen's last episode. We were all shocked. Ryder fully remembered there being more that he got to do with you. He was like, there's no way that's the end. Did you know that this was going to be your last episode?
Yeah. I was, from the original booking, I was booked for a 3-episode arc.
Wow.
That was the booking. I mean, of course, you know, every actor is like, oh my God, it'd be so fun if I could go back. Or, oh my God, it'd be great if they decided to write her in. Or, you know, maybe he'll need to kind of stay in touch with his mom. And I'm not sure it was fully ever explained. Like, do you guys know what happened to Verna?
No, closure would have been nice.
Yeah, we're going to, we do find out, you know.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
That you are not my biological mom. That ends up becoming revealed.
That is revealed in season 7, that you're not actually his biological mother.
Right.
And we haven't gotten to those episodes yet, so we did not remember that. Like, that was completely a shock to us, but about 200 people emailed it to us.
Does anybody here remember if we find out who his biological mom is? Does Chet even know who is? I mean, he must know, right? It's not like a guy. It's like, you know who the mom is. So it's, I mean, you got it, but it's never mentioned, right? It's just like, she's not your biological mom, but we're not going to talk about who it is. And it's not Jack's mom.
I guess not.
No.
I mean, I know that Blake has to come back for, obviously he comes back and dies.
Right.
But I feel like he must have come back for another episode in between there. And at some point, isn't it explained like where Sean is living? What happens?
I think he
to
comes back
trip?
For a lot more because there's a whole storyline with Jack too. I mean, I think you guys do a few episodes together and then he does a couple as a ghost, right? I mean, it's like.
He comes back as a ghost. Yeah, but there's I'm pretty sure that we introduced Jack without Blake coming back.
Right.
And then Blake comes back for the episode where he dies. It's called, like, We'll Have a Good Time Then. Like,
and
the
it's
Cat's
just one.
Song.
It's just one, really? Wow.
I think so, because the whole point of that episode is that, like, he and I come to terms. Like, we kind of, like, find a new relationship now that he's back in town after being away, and then he dies of a heart attack. It's a tragic episode. It's really dramatic.
Shireen, so much happened after you left us.
So much happened. And clearly, Chet was kind of, you know, like a wild man. I mean, he obviously had a baby with somebody else, and then maybe that's why Verna left him, you know, just to kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe she didn't know Sean wasn't hers.
I swear I gave birth to that baby.
There are a couple of years of her life she doesn't quite remember.
Did you start acting at a young age? Did you start in New York? How did you get into the industry?
I went to a very good college, and my parents wouldn't let me study acting, and so I was pre-med for 3 years.
Wow.
My dad had been a doctor, and I thought I would, okay, fine. If I can't be an actor, I'll make dad happy. Of course, I went to work at a hospital during a winter break and was literally, you know, dizzy at every turn because I was so overwhelmed by the amount of, you know, pain in the hospital. And I remember thinking, like, this isn't kind of the hospital I was expecting. I was expecting bright lights and a white lab coat. And, you know, I was the acting version of a hospital.
Yes. Yes.
And
you wanted to say no.
Once I graduated, I went and worked in fashion, which was my second love to acting, was fashion. I went to Mademoiselle magazine. I was in the fashion department. And then I got a job at American Vogue here in New York. And I was in the fashion department. And I did that for about 3 years. And then I became the national scout for a top modeling agency called Elite.
Oh, yeah.
I was 24 years old. They sent me to Paris. And I ran around with all these supermodels. It was an extraordinary time. But while I was there, my family hit a really hard bump. A lot of really tough things happened to my family. And my fiance had an affair with a model from the agency.
Oh,
and I was not only devastated by what was happening to my family, but I was heartbroken for the first time in my life. And I was living in Paris away from my family and especially from my younger sisters. So I came back to New York and decided to live my own life. And I took my first acting class with a wonderful acting teacher named Warren Robertson in New York. And within 2 years, I booked a small independent film. And in the third year, I became a member of the Actors Studio.
Wow!
After one audition. And I booked my first feature, which was a feature with Steven Seagal called Out for Justice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anybody seen Richie? Anybody know what Richie did? Bobby Lupo? Oh, yeah.
No, yeah, I knew Will was chomping at the bit to talk to you about this.
I wasn't going to say anything, but of course... Of course I know, but I could do Out for Justice backwards, sideways, and forwards.
Oh, yeah, my God. Well, yeah, that was my first big role, and it took me out to L.A. And once I got to L.A., I was like, it's January. It's freezing in New York. It's gorgeous here. Like, why would I go back? So I stayed. And one of the agents, you know, at the time, you could kind of be hip-pocketed by a couple of agents. Mm-hmm. So one had gotten me this role. But another one had wanted to represent me. And so she finds me through finding my mom. And she says, have you ever, what are you doing? Are you working with anybody out there? And I said, no. And I said, I had just wrapped Out for Justice. And she said, I want to send you up for this guest star on Who's the Boss? Because Who's the Boss was a big show at the time. And
yeah.
Went up for the guest star and I booked it. And it was called Tony and the Mafia Princess. And so it was about Tony Danza's character has to domesticate the daughter of a mafioso. And she is, you know, just kind of a spoiled little girl, basically.
Right.
It's a great episode. It was a guest star. So I do that. And then Vicki Rosenberg, who was the casting director of that series, said, who's representing you out here? And she sent me to another wonderful agent, Ro Diamond. And within about a few months, Ro sent me up for American Heart, which was a movie with Jeff Bridges. And Jeff, this was based on a documentary. So, short answer, no, I was in my mid to late 20s when I really started acting and got my first break.
Wow.
And this leads me to just say to you, like, I tell people all the time, if there's a dream in your heart, if there's some gift there that's being carried within you, it's not an accident. It was placed there by something bigger than you. And there will be a way made for it if you address it, if you go to it. Wow. And I have to say I was really lucky because I never believed in no, and I still don't. I don't believe in the limitations that we often hear about.
Yeah.
Oh, it's harder. You know, it's very hard. If you're too old, if you're too this, if you're too that. I don't buy any. I never bought any of it. You know, I just believe that, again, if the yearning is there, a way will be made if you address it. So I was very positive about my career all the way through.
That's great.
So I did American Heart, which is a beautiful movie if you've never seen it. And then I went up for the Tony Danza series, Hudson Street. I wasn't supposed to get it. In the last minute, I go up to test and I book this thing, 22 episodes on air. It was, really nothing short of a miracle. It was my first series audition. I had never
auditioned
series before. I know it was kind of the luck of the innocent. I'd never been into test before. So I walked into this room and there was like 35 ABC executives. And I was just like, hi. I was just so happy. I was completely delighted to be there.
I just
booked that. And then after that was when Boy Meets World came along and a lot of other guest stars and recurring roles. And that was at a time when a good working actor could get a lot of guest and recurring roles.
Yep.
And then I don't know what you guys might remember. What happened for me, just to bring you up to speed, was in 2001, there was a writer's strike. Mm-hmm. 2001, just near the end of the resolution of the writer's strike, was an actor's strike.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of us who were solid working actors go out of work for like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I wasn't prepared for it financially. I just hadn't, you know, your viewers might find it interesting. I don't know. But when you're an actor, you know, and you're earning, you have usually come off of a long period of not earning.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you begin to earn and suddenly you're paying down debts.
Yep.
And you're, you know, you're living, you try to live a little better than you have.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, maybe you let yourself enjoy life a bit more than you did.
Right.
And suddenly you realize, oh, it might be another minute before I work again.
Yeah.
And I just didn't have that savvy, you know, to kind of figure out like, oh, wait a minute, you know, I've just come off a series. Let me save this portion or invest that portion, you know.
Yeah.
Just didn't know. And so a year and a half go by and I'm going through my savings.
Yeah.
And by 2002, 2003, I was in a panic.
Mm.
And I also don't know if you guys remember, but that was the beginning of reality programming.
Yep.
Yes.
Killed the industry.
Did, and it made it a lot harder. Change the industry. It did change it, and not necessarily for the worse, or it was harder, but then it became easier because a lot of other platforms developed for us all to work on and create.
Yeah.
But by 2003, I was like, and I spent a year auditioning. I was put on a veil 14 times.
Oh my God.
Wow. And I was losing the parts to name actresses who were bigger than me, who had been waiting that same period of time for a job. And so I began to panic and I began to seek out alternate ways to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
I also became very humble about finding alternate ways to make a living. You know, it's so important, and I didn't know this then, to keep working and to keep serving other people in any way that you can, so that you're not just earning and having a second income source, but that you are engaged in a meaningful way with other people, be they creatives or non, you know. And thankfully, it took me a really tough year of babysitting and just barely getting by to stumble upon an idea, which was to take used clothing and rework those pieces of clothing into fashion.
Yeah, you were upcycling before upcycling was a buzzy word like it is right now.
I was a big part of that trend of upcycling reworking. And I started out in a flea market in a little 10 by 10 booth in a parking lot. And in the third month of my booth, I got offered a warehouse to build a store in. in the second month of that warehouse, the New York Times wrote about it.
Yes. This is the Fairfax Trading Post you were at, right?
Yes, I was at Fairfax. And because it was Fairfax in West Hollywood, here I have humbled in a way. I've become humble. I'll be honest. I spent a year babysitting and I cried every day.
Yeah.
What had happened to my life? All I knew was I had to start earning money and I had to stop using credit cards to get by. And mm-hmm. I had to stop waiting for residual checks. I had to get to work. Which right. really means get engaged with other humans and find a way to serve them.
Yeah.
And what I stumbled upon was I had a talent for dressing women and a talent for style because I had had a background in it.
Sure.
And so here I go to the Trading Post, but my eyes when I go to these vintage stores, to these thrift shops, is for fashion. I'm like, well, Marc Jacobs is doing 1950 and Louis Vuitton is doing 1960. And I could see that because mm-hmm. I had the background. And so all the coolest girls in Hollywood are walking into my booth going like, what are you doing? What is this? And I attracted this really cool group of young celebrities. They were all just about to break through into celebrity status. I'm being, without tossing out names, really the coolest it girls became my clients. I ended up with this warehouse store. I end up getting covered by the press, but like crazy. I end up working, trend forecasting for all these huge designers because girls who wear vintage clothing are always on the fringe. They're always the girl who wants to look different than everyone else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fashion is created from the ground up. Fashion is created by the people who really don't have the money to go into the stores. Once it's in the stores, it's on trend. It's already. Right. Everybody wants to know what's coming. It's going to be that girl who's got the courage to look like nobody else.
Yeah.
And buy something in a thrift store and make it cool. And so those are my girls. And so everybody wanted to study them. And I did this for about 12 years. And it began to morph into another form of making clothes. And I began to make wedding dresses.
Oh, jeez.
And yeah, it's an amazing story. And I will tell you that now I came back to New York in 2016. I went back to the Actors Studio. I began writing that story because this Great. Is a story of humility and transformation and purpose. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It makes me very emotional.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Because I learned when I stopped acting in that period, because I couldn't get the work, that I had growth to be done. Mm-hmm. I had growth to do.
Yeah.
And that would teach me what my purpose was, which was really to speak into the hearts of especially young women and to encourage them to have a sense of self-esteem and to have a sense of compassion for themselves, self-esteem, and a commitment to their individuality.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the beginning of many designers designing and merchandising for authenticity. Yeah. And it was the beginning of this trend of you don't need to be you aren't like anyone else. And so claim your authenticity, which is a tremendous, really gift, right? To a human being to go oh, the coolest thing about me is me. It's that yes. I get to be entirely authentically me. And that was a big part of my messaging as I worked with every little girl who was, and they were all mostly very young girls, who came to me for their first prom dress or their first mm-hmm. Important dress, their bat mitzvah dress, their prom dress,
quinceañera,
their winter formal.
Whatever. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I look at them and go oh, you listen to me. You are such a beauty here. Let's choose you something cool. And I moved into the space of really loving and supporting them. And they changed my life. So in 2016, I come back to New York and I begin writing about this. And in 2020, it was before COVID or after, it was just after COVID, the play was ready. It was called Who Are You? It had six songs about girls and their moms and me, and about really a form of faith, what happens when you give your life over to something bigger, higher than you, and what will that thing do with you? It'll make your life a lot bigger than any life you can make for yourself. And I wrote this story, and the first producers who heard it are developing it now for a big musical.
Yeah,
that's great.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And it's moving because Well, I don't know. I guess it's kind of full circle, but Who Are You is now being developed into, you know, a musical with 16 songs instead of six. And I'm working on it. I literally, you're meeting me at a very interesting moment. And I'm going to say this for you guys. You know, this business can discard you at different intervals of time. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to realize that there is a gifting in it. If you don't experience it as a rejection, but instead as an opportunity,
right,
to look inward and figure out how you're changing,
yeah,
and where your voice, what it is that you actually are starting to learn about life and how you're going to use that in your art, mm-hmm, which is different than just being an actor. It's like, what are you here to say and, yeah, do and give to this world? And when you've been given a unique opportunity, as you guys have been, and I have in my own way, to address a larger audience, it is incumbent upon you to refine your voice, your messaging. What are you saying? Because people are listening to you, mm-hmm, and they care, and they, yeah, and they value you, you know? And so I see now that in those 10 years that I left the business, and I did leave it, I was refining another understanding about, yeah, life, that I was going to then come back now, years later, when many actors would feel that their value has diminished.
Right.
I instead know that my value has actually increased.
Yes.
There, I believe our society, there's almost a conspiracy against aging and against people who are artists who are aging, or let's say seasoning, or I don't know, marinating in,
mm-hmm,
life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that we become more powerful and more valuable. I know that what actually is happening is you become more potent, mm-hmm, just as society or the industry might want to inhibit you.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I'm here to tell you, fight that urge and fight buying it. Don't believe it. You are arriving into this new period in your lives where you will produce, you're going to write, you're going to develop projects. And it's really critical that you maintain a sense of commitment, yes, to what you know you carry, you know? And so, yeah, here at this moment, you know, I've just written an adaptation of a one-act play into a screenplay. We just shot it and it's beautiful. It's called A Tantalizing, and it's based on a William Master Simone one act. And I'm starring opposite John Cullum,
yeah,
who's a 2-time Tony winner and a 5-time Tony nominee and an Emmy nominee. And he's celebrated his 94th birthday.
Wow.
2 days before we wrap.
Jeez.
Stunning work. And I'm working on the musical, which I can't tell you the new title, but it was called Who Are You? And, you know, again, my nature tells me, who I am tells me that I have no doubt that it'll occur, because it's part of something bigger. It's a part of a bigger message that will have value and go forward. So I'm working on that. And I've written a play, an 8-character play about financial inequality, mm, and what is fair. Is it fair for some people to have so much when so many people are suffering and have so little? And I say it isn't, it's not fair, you know, and the system isn't set up fairly. And that's something I have a lot of compassion for. And I'm committed to articulating those messages. And it happens to be a comedy, so that's good. You know, it's about a bunch of really like greedy people and how desperately they all want to find fairness, you know? So yes, that's what I'm doing, and that's what I'm up to, and it's also what I believe, and I want to encourage you guys to own in your own careers, because you clearly came into this business to deliver something really important that impacted a lot of young people. And I'm pointing to that room because I still see bridal clients, and much less than I used to, because I am busier with creative ventures now, but these young women, especially those in their late 20s and 30s, when I tell them that I was Sean's mom, I had girls run out of the room screaming, like, oh, like they can't. It's almost like something that they didn't know has come to life before them.
Right. And yes.
Because it's because they loved you guys so much and they loved Boy Meets World so much.
Well,
it meant a lot.
Thank you for sharing all of that with us.
Great story. Amazing.
I really enjoyed doing my research on you last night and learning about, I'm a vintage clothing fanatic.
Oh my
and
gosh.
So learning about you and just doing some research on that. I mean, you were a pioneer. You are a pioneer. And so thank you for sharing all of that with us.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
It's 2024 and stress is already everywhere.
Deadlines at work.
Your kids screaming at you.
Nonstop traffic.
The world is ending.
That's a big jump there, Ryder.
Yeah, sorry, kind of true.
Yeah, well, when we want to get away from the struggles of everyday life and have some comforting me time, we break into some Keebler Sandies.
Let's say it's finals week and Mr. Feeny has scheduled all of the tests into one day. How will Topanga find a comforting moment to herself?
Go to the mall?
Not with this hair.
Play guitar with her father, Jedediah?
Depends on which Jedediah.
Bite into some delicious Keebler Sandies?
Exactly. Keebler Sandies are buttery shortbread cookies made with simple ingredients.
And each Keebler Sandies cookie is baked to perfection by the adorable Keebler elves for a light sweetness and texture that melts in your mouth.
God bless those little Keebler elves.
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat that will keep you going.
So, the next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for a Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
Tell the elves Pod Meets World sent ya.
They're real. I've seen them.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Finally, looking back now, it's been almost 30 years since you made your appearance on Boy Meets World. If you could give a message to that Shireen we met on Boy Meets World, what would your message to her be?
Well, it's a big part of what's in the play, the musical, is that message. And it took me so many years to learn it. I speak to men and women, to all people, but I really couldn't see myself then. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the value of my presence. My shyness was really fear of connecting, of connection. Yeah. I didn't know that when people would meet me, that they would actually want to keep knowing me. I just assumed that it was, you know, because I had done the job, that they were all being nice to me, instead of thinking, no, they care about me because I care about them. My message to her then would be, tell everyone the truth. Give up your addictions. I was still in addiction at that time. I was struggling with a few things. Mm. And, you know, addiction is tricky because it can be invisible to others. Mm. But if you suffer with addiction, it is inhibiting your sense of purpose. It is when you surrender your addictions, you move into the truth. And I wasn't yet living in the truth then, because I was afraid to ask for help. Mm. And so again, you know, 1996, yeah, I wasn't yet entirely free. So that's part of my message too, is tell people the truth about everything. Tell everyone the truth. Human beings, we are wired to understand one another in the truth. Mm-hmm. We are. We actually are wired to be compassionate. And people will help you if you tell them what you're struggling with. And so I would say that. I didn't know that I was beautiful. I'd say today I'm an attractive woman, but then I was a beautiful young woman and I didn't know. Mm. I felt insecure. I felt not good enough. I felt that my value was based on my physical appearance. Mm-hmm. I remember one day walking across a lot and some guys whistled at me and I thought, Shireen, how many years is it going to take you to find freedom, you know, in your physical self? And honestly, I never really came to it until I gave up needing to have it. And right. I gave that up and right. I began serving other young women. I began working with women and I thought, I used to drive to my vintage store every day and say, I surrender my face. Because I know that nobody cared what I look like and nobody cares what we look like. Also, you know, giving up a notion about my future. I was so desperately attached to being an actress that I couldn't see how many gifts I had that I could draw from. Right. And that maybe I would go down other parts of the river, you know, into other little tributaries of my gifting and then come back,
yeah,
you know, into a richer thing. But I couldn't see that. So I was holding on so tight agenda that I had, not realizing that there was a latent talent, which was this talent for design and styling, that would bring me back with even greater gifts.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. Life is perfect, you guys. It's painful and it's perfect and it's heartbreaking and it's joyful and you just got to stay in it and tell people the truth. Ask everyone for what you need. Like, tell people, you know, I'm working on this thing and I don't know who to talk to and I'm wondering how to do this. I didn't know how to do that then.
Yeah.
My community got smaller and smaller and smaller till I was completely isolated, going broke. But even going through that now, I see was perfect for me.
Yeah.
You know, going into the darkness, coming back out again as a whole person, as a healed person who was free of addiction, you know. So,
What a story. Thank you so much for sharing and thank you for spending your time with us here today and telling us all about the wonderful things you're working on now and what a fascinating, interesting, beautiful life you've lived.
Thank you. And I want to tell you also, thank you for having me on and thank you for that you're doing this. Not, you know, for me, but I mean, for the people that are hearing you, I think bringing people back and talking about your experience, again, you're sharing the value of your own lives. People want it. You know, they need to know from you. So I hope that you all keep doing other projects and keep expressing yourselves the way that you are so generously. It's important.
Thank you. We appreciate you so much. So great to see you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck with all of your projects.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Wow. What a story. What a life. My gosh.
She's I wanted to ask her something, but I was so riveted. I wanted to ask her who she thought was the better actor, Jeff Bridges or Steven Seagal. But
yeah, that's a tough debate, isn't it?
Seriously, I didn't want to go for the joke, frankly, because I was so riveted by what she was saying. I was like, this is not a time to joke, but everyone knows Steven Seagal is the better of the two actors.
It's so interesting, like her incredible life. It reminds me, I've talked about it before, when we've done Q&As and people say like, what's your advice to somebody who wants to get into acting? And I always feel like a buzzkill saying, know what your plan B is, because I don't mean because you're probably going to end up having to do it, but like, I didn't truly feel free to be creative until I knew if somebody isn't going to give me a chance, if I'm not going to make it in acting, I have something else I love just as much.
Yeah.
I have something else. And for her, you know, she was holding on to it so tightly. I need to be an actor. I need to be an actor. I need to be an actor. She was going broke. And then she said, wait a minute, I have this fashion background. And she pursued this whole other part of her life that exactly like she said, ended up giving her so much more value in then the entertainment industry because she had that life experience. So it's just, you know, like she said, life is perfect. The way it works out, when, even when you think it's a disaster and you're falling back on your plan B, like it's just, it's so great how if you just let it unfold.
Yeah.
I think the key is like, you know, the problem with acting or the challenge, the biggest challenge with acting is that so much of it is out of your control and you're constantly, you know, being rejected. You're constantly not getting parts. That's part of the job, right? It's like, you know, you're swinging and missing more often than you're actually hitting, but that's okay. But the problem is you start to feel like that's not okay, that you're being pushed out of the industry, that you're being told, well, you're not really talented. You're not actually, you don't belong here.
Yes.
And so I think having a plan B is exactly right, but it's not even that it needs to be a career. It just needs to be a passion or a sense of self that doesn't, is not tethered to the your status within the industry because your status within the industry is a nightmare. And if you're looking to that to give you a sense of self, you're never going to be satisfied. You're never going to be happy. Yeah. You know, and I think it took me way too long to realize that, you know.
Well, it's also when you're younger, an actor is what you are. When you're older, an actor is what you do.
Yeah.
And those are two completely different things. I'm an actor in that it's what I do. It's no longer who I am. But when you're 17, 18 years old, it's who you are. I'm an actor.
Right.
Now it's like, well,
you know, you want to be categorized, you know, especially out in high school age, like that's what you want, right?
Exactly.
It's like a sense of identity and like, oh, this is, I found who I am. And the truth is you found what you're going to do, maybe for the next couple of years, maybe for the rest of your life. But
I gotta
remember that to like encourage indie, you know, because I feel like there's a tendency as a parent and as a friend, as anybody, to look at somebody and be like, you're this type of person this is who you, and you just, it's so much better to be like, you're having fun doing that. Yeah. You're doing this really well. Keep doing that maybe for a while, but it's not going to be like,
it's not your identity. It's your occupation. No. That's
always,
it. Yeah. And that's, you need to remember.
Or passion, right?
Or passion.
Or just your art.
Passion. Exactly.
Just for its own sake.
Exactly.
Let's do it.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you all for joining us for this episode of Pod Meets World. As always, you can follow us on Instagram, Pod Meets World Show. You can send us your emails, podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. And we have merch.
Like, wow, bizarre merch.
Podmeetsworldshow.com will send us out.
We love you all. Pod dismissed. Pod Meets World is an iHeart podcast produced and hosted by Danielle Fishel, Will Friedle, and Ryder Strong. Executive producers Jensen Karp and Amy Sugarman. Executive in charge of production Danielle Romo. Producer and editor Tara Sudbach. Producer Maddie Moore. Engineer and Boy Meets World superfan Easton Allen. Our theme song is by Kyle Morton of Typhoon, and you can follow us on Instagram at Pod Meets World Show or email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com.
When I'm on my way to drop off the kids at school and I'm on about 5 hours of sleep and I haven't had my coffee yet, I'm truly one of a kind.
Yeah, this sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
It is. But there is one thing I can do immediately to bring some comfort and calm to the situation and keep me moving forward. Eat Keebler Sandies.
I like to think that if the good-looking guy was still around, sitting on the couch, comforting himself about not getting into college, he'd ditch the Cocoa Puffs and down some Keebler Sandies instead.
Mixed with chocolate syrup?
Ooh, why not?
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat to keep you going.
Each Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie is baked to perfection by the Keebler Elves for a light sweetness and a texture that melts in your mouth.
The next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for Keebler Sandies shortbread cookies to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through.
BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy.
Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you.
Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.